This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber. Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He's Casey McClain, and he's next.
And now, from the legendary Studio B, so you're in Seattle with Gregor.
I know Casey McClain from Twitter when a guy called Package Man For Real was tweeting at both myself and at his podcast, the Off Speed podcast, oftentimes about baseball and sports and then comedians. It was a whole mishmash of people getting together to do fun things. Sadly, that pod is over. Casey started a new one, though, called Cask Audio. He does something really nerdy by day and then does comedy by night. A really interesting character and a lot of fun. Anyway, I know Dan Soder because Dan was a guy I trained to do radio.
Oh, yeah.
Back in like 2000, probably 2000.
Oh, wow.
They're like, there's going to be a new guy to run Loveline after. You got to show him what to do. And I was like, yeah, right.
Wait, you were on Loveline?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was a syndicated show.
Right.
I wish, man. That'd be...
Well, because, I mean, obviously you weren't one of the hosts. I know that. But I thought maybe you were...
a bit part of some sort.
Well, I don't know. Like, they have a bunch of producers and junior producers and call screeners. And
sure.
You could have been any one of those people.
I wish, man. It would have been because then you'd be an LA where they do it all out of K-Rock and stuff, and to be part of that. Actually, our company, Intercom, is acquiring CBS right now, so soon I'll be co-workers with the K-Rock gang down there. So. But we syndicated Loveline, so it came on at 10 o'clock on a satellite feed, and I trained Dan how to push the right button and play the songs in between and essentially be like a super stoner behind the board. And the first day he shows up to work. Dan Soder's a comedian out of New York City. Look him up. He's the best.
He's great.
He shows up to the station, and I'm like, hey, man, you're just going to show up to your first day of a new job in a crazy industry just stoned? And he's like, I'm not stoned, bro. And I'm like, yeah, you're freaking stoned. What are you doing? He's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, don't lie to a guy who also gets stoned before work. And he's like, the relief that came off of him was incredible. But from there, we were like pals. Like,
oh, that's cool.
And he has certainly surpassed my success level by the feats that he's already pulled off. So that's cool. We should look it up probably, but he's going to be in Tacoma.
Yeah, Tacoma Comedy Club sometime next month.
Like in June sometime-ish?
I think it's in, maybe it's in May. Maybe I'm wrong. It might be... Oh, boy, I hope it's not this weekend. That would be...
I have to tell you that Dan and I are close enough. I think that I would get a text message being like, yo, dude, I'm in Tacoma. Dan Soder, Tacoma. Look up Dan Soder on the internet, too. He's great on...
He's an amazing podcast guest on other people's podcasts. Not,
oh
it's not like he's been on mine. But
he would. If you.
Is that right?
If you need a guest, I'll make sure to...
Oh, dude, I would... Oh,
Friday,
eternally
June,
grateful.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Tacoma, Washington, June 9th, 10th, and 11th. So there you go, Dan. There's your free plug. Anyway, Casey, I know you do comedy. That's why this all started up. You're a comedian also. Is Tacoma your home club?
Yeah, definitely. That is.
They are, sorry to the other clubs in town in Seattle. They're the best club in Tacoma, I'll put it that way, okay? I love the Tacoma Comedy Club. I don't know what their approach is with new comedians. Are you a new comedian? How much skin do you have in this game?
I'm definitely new. I don't have any, I've never accomplished anything the whole time I've done comedy, but I have done.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That is the, I will say, you got to work really hard to not accomplish anything in comedy. Like, to accomplish something, you have to work even harder,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
I've done like some weekend shows there. I have a monthly show called Drink and Debate there.
Oh, what do you do? Obviously, besides Drink and Debate, it's very obvious, but what's the.
I host it, and then we ask two teams of comedians to debate wild topics where there's clearly one side that makes more sense. And like one of them was, should everyone in Iowa be forced to marry a close relative? And the yes side won by a lot, like by a landslide.
Who judges the audience?
We have three judges. Sometimes they're comedians. We had like a couple guys that are really big comedy fans last time. Actually, I don't know if I'm allowed to say his name. Seattle Radio Guy will be on the judging
pit.
It's Slick Hawk Matt Mikolas, who is the producer for Mitch in the Morning on KJRAM. He'll be one of our judges. I might have to talk you into being a judge.
I would gladly do that.
100%.
I love comedy. So
we just did it. We just booked it. June 11th is the next one. It'll be right after a weekend of Dan Soder. And
it's June 11th. It says that he's there for that. It says Tacoma, Washington, June 11th, Sunday.
Oh, is that right?
That must be errant.
That could be wrong.
Page not found is what I clicked through on.
Boy.
It said page not found. So.
Well, if either that or I just found out that my show got canceled. June 11th, also my birthday. So come.
Hey,
don't,
happy birthday,
please,
buddy.
Don't buy me drinks if you come out to that show, because I will be drinking.
Is it always on a Sunday?
It's always on a Sunday.
Okay, Sundays are tough, but I'll figure it out one day.
Oh, yeah, you guys got to wake up early.
I do that morning thing, and I'm up at 3:45 every Monday morning.
I think
so
you just let it ride. Just come to work drunk. I think that's the move.
But I love the idea. I love a comedy show. I love the different shows that get set up around that and stuff. Mm-hmm. You get a good draw?
We've gotten a decent draw. We also are doing, so I do this other show at Wingman Brewers, but starting June 25th.
He's wearing the shirt.
I am wearing the shirt. They get very happy whenever they see me in a picture. Wearing the shirt. June 25th, we're doing a Last Call Comedy Showcase at Tacoma Comedy Club, but May 28th, I'm plugging like unabashedly.
We're plugging up front, too.
Yeah.
We're not even waiting to be in for plugs. Just get after it.
All I'm trying to do is tell you that I'm a comedian, and then we got into this. And I'm a comedian. I'm a low-level comedian. I hope you knew that going in. I hope I didn't disappoint. No, I'm all right. I'm good.
I just want to change gears really quickly. I just got an update from MLB, the At-Bat app. Justin Smoke singles in the top of the fifth to score. The Blue Jays take a 3-2 lead over the Mariners.
Yes.
God damn it, Justin Smoke.
Yeah.
How come you never did that ever in Seattle?
Yeah, that is the first Seattle-related base hit he's had in his whole career.
He's got a ton of strikeouts, though. So you do comedy, and mm-hmm. have you come up completely through Tacoma Comedy Club?
Oh, no, I've done some shows at, like, the Underground.
Is that like, your home club? Is that where you get your most stage time and
oh,
stuff?
Oh, yeah, by far. I definitely, and I've, like, yeah, I the, like, the normal story, I think. Like, I've worked the door there, I've tried, cool. Like, really busting ass to be there, because it's 1 mile from where I live.
Yeah.
I love the club. It's easily, I mean, and I'm not disparaging to other clubs. I love the Underground. I've liked the time I've spent at the Parlor. Tacoma Comedy Club is easily my favorite club.
I've been to a lot of comedy clubs, and no one has ever made me feel as like I'm about to have a great time like the Tacoma Comedy Club.
They do just about everything right. The owner is a longtime comedian.
Yeah.
And so I think
that can go one of two ways also.
Sure. And I think that he's taken like the things that he liked touring the country and the things that he doesn't like touring the country and just kind of like he's wiped away the stuff he doesn't like and maximized the stuff that he does like.
I've only been down there for one show. It was Joe List. And
we are going to fall in love, I think.
Oh,
Joe
good.
List is my favorite comedian.
Oh, he's great.
He's the best.
Look up Joe List. Joe List Comedy, I think, or Comedian
think
Joe List.
One of those. He just put out an album called Are You Mad At Me?
And it's, that guy's funny.
He is great. Yeah. And then Mark Norman.
Yeah, so Mark Norman, his podcasting co-host.
Dude, we are in love. That's my favorite podcast.
I've stopped listening to comedy podcasts.
Okay.
I had to take a break from it because I found myself doing nothing myself and only listening to other people do things.
I understand.
And I was like, I'm overwhelming myself with not growing at all. Having a great time laughing about stuff. But those two knuckleheads on Tuesdays with Stories are wonderful. Yeah. The You Know What Dude podcast, where all those guys kind of pop up a lot. That can be a long, tedious listen sometimes. But like, you get a Dan Soder on there. You get a Joe List sometimes. And hearing them in these different environments where it's just comedians popping off at each other is fantastic.
I love it. I've tried to do the same thing where I've stopped listening to so many. I've listened to a lot more NPR podcasts now.
It's the season.
Yeah.
there are some serious things that people are starting to be more interested in.
Yeah, I'm sure NPR is just killing it. Like, that is the unspoken thing, is NPR is just destroying in the ratings.
Yeah, less dick and racist jokes and more of the more entertainment that is around issues, I feel like.
Yeah, I do also feel like I end up hearing premises and then feeling guilty if I try to mine those premises.
Sure.
And I never know, like, I don't know where to make the divide. But I can't stop listening to Tuesdays with Stories. It's my favorite.
They're so fun, man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. It's good to find someone else that kind of has a similar interest.
It's amazing that you like Dan Soder and Joe List, and we've discovered this in the first 5 minutes of this podcast.
It was, I went to see, again, Joe List down at Tacoma Comedy Club, and they were super cool to me there. And he's so awkward, and being able to go up afterwards and be like, hey, man, Tuesdays with Stories, you're all right. And he's like, oh, hey. And I was like, I know Dan Soder. And he's like, it's too bad, or whatever. Something like that. But it was like, it's fun to know, to be able to know that those guys are real people. They're real, just like nerds that are doing comedy,
rather than
like, oh, that's a person who's like an artist doing something. I'm like, no, I hear them all the time being dummies too. And then you talk to Dan and he knows about it. It's fun to like get kind of a different side of that. Do you, from hanging out at a comedy club enough like that, do you end up being able to pick anything up from these guys, like, in person, not like just from watching from the side? Are people like that approachable typically?
So I hate to meet someone through, like, if I go to a show, I definitely don't want to hang out and talk to them.
Of course.
I did a weekend with this guy named Brett Ernst, who works in, or he lives in LA, and I will say I picked up so much stuff from him, and some of that was like drunk philosophy also, like, some of it maybe we should filter a little bit,
of course, but
I had a couple moments where, like, this is like an iconic moment in my life, nobody else cares about this at all, but
it's the best.
It's after the Saturday night show, after Brett Ernst has turned up rap music louder than the staff definitely wanted to hear, like, and songs that nobody cares about, like songs from the late 80s that I was barely born when this song came out. And then he turns the music down and he looks at me, grabs me by the bill of my hat, and he goes, oh, I can swear, right? You'll bleep it?
Sure, I'll bleep, yeah.
Okay. He goes, you're a fucking artist, man. You decide what's funny. And like, I don't, you know, I'm still, I have never, I don't have enough courage to just, I decide what's funny. Like, I'm not fearless. I want to be more fearless. But I think about that anytime I write a joke and I'm like worried people are going to not like it.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I decide. Like, and then I just talk myself out of telling it a lot of the time.
But it's got to be like, I deal with advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't just say whatever comes to the old brain of mine. I'm worried about ratings and things like that. And that can be a hang up at times to not be like, I should have gone there with that story or whatever.
Yeah.
But I didn't because I don't want someone to be mad at me.
Yeah.
You're your own boss in that environment.
That's true.
Other than not getting invited back, maybe.
Yeah. The boss doesn't pay shit in this case.
That's incredible.
That's true. I do think there's something wonderful and independent about it.
Do you get to see these people as humans, or are they still performers that are still an arm's length away?
It depends. I've had people who are incredibly, like, Brett Ernst is relatively famous, treated me like an equal. We got real drunk and went to the casino and he tried to show me how to play craps. That did not work out well. I did not learn how to play craps.
Sure.
I've had people who have, like,
hold on, no one actually knows how to play craps, just for the record. It's not a game where anyone really knows what's going on.
I agree with you completely. Okay. That was my suspicion the whole time, but I'm glad you revealed it on this podcast.
Sorry, Las Vegas.
Actually, that's probably good news for Las Vegas that nobody knows how to. I've had people that are, like, you know, my level that think that they're that are not approachable, that are my level too. Like, I don't know. I think it just depends on the person, right? I don't think they're any different than normal people. Maybe a little more neurotic and a little more like, I don't know.
You seem pretty grounded. Like, you seem like a pretty reasonable human.
Yeah, I think I'm all right. I don't know. There's probably people out there that don't like me.
I see a ring on your hand. You're a married
guy. I'm married. Yeah.
So someone finds you tolerable.
Yeah, one person.
Hey, that's all you really need, though, right?
She did send me here today, though. So.
She's like, no, you can sit through an hour of traffic from Tacoma, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things that I really value when I meet a comedian, because almost there's a ton of comedians that are, like, single and, like, hopelessly single, right?
Sure.
Like, not even unhappily single, but they're never going to be. And I like when I meet someone that is married and successful and has, like, a successful marriage and is successful at comedy. One, it's, like, an inspiration. But two, like, I know that I have things in common with that person immediately, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't find that all the time.
And that somebody finds them tolerable.
Exactly.
Like, someone's vouching for you if you're married to somebody. That means at least one person out there is vouching for you,
right,
being okay enough.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You're married too, right?
I'm a married guy, yeah. I convinced somebody that I was all right.
That's good. How long have you been married for?
Just about a year, not quite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm a little over a year. I was October 2015.
Okay, cool. I was last fall, so it's still new and it's still fun. It didn't change at all. My life changed almost 0% when I got married. I was like, oh, I did the right thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't like there was, it wasn't different. I had to be, like, instead of girlfriend or fiance, I had to say wife now. And I was like, oh,
I hated saying fiance, by the way.
Me too. It never worked for me.
Yeah. And especially, it's much worse in jokes, I gotta say. Like, girlfriend's fine. Wife is great. Wife is way better in jokes.
Yeah.
Fiance is a weird middle ground that no one can relate to, I think.
I feel like there's material there, though, but now it's past. Like,
yeah,
you had
late.
Your opportunity.
It's too late.
Do you feel like you're becoming dead inside by doing comedy?
I do think that every time I think of a joke premise that I was a late bedwetter.
Okay.
And the first time I ever told anyone that wasn't, like, my mom was on stage.
Okay, wait, what do you mean by late?
Like, I was definitely, the last time I wet my bed was certainly as an adult.
Okay.
But not, like, habitually, right? Like, that was alcohol related.
Yeah.
Probably, like, 13, 14-ish.
Okay.
That's too old.
That's, oh, you were still, or that's when you started?
No, that's when I was still.
Have you, sorry everyone listening that doesn't give a crap, but have you listened to the Ari Shaffir and Mark Normand bedwetting?
Yes, I have, yes.
I literally just finished that yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And so, like, that's fresh in my mind that you have something in common with those guys as well.
Yeah, that's, I think, anyways, so I the joke never worked as, like, well enough for me to keep doing it, but it was like a certain part of me, I don't know if it's dead inside or more alive inside, like the part of me that I hold private is dying.
Yeah.
And then, like, a part of me that's more public, I guess, is growing.
I just don't understand the, like, if one person says one mildly mean thing to me on the internet, I, like, shut down and want to die.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine that your whole art is based on standing up in front of people who are like, I'm not feeling this, dude.
Yeah.
Also, I'm drunk and talking through your whole set. Like, I can't. It would kill me. I would have to, like, kill a part of myself in order to deal with that. And so I always wonder if comedians are there.
It happens a lot. I think it's, like, just enough exposure to that, and you get a little bit numb to it for good. Like, for good. The first place I did comedy was at Tacoma Comedy Club. The second place I did comedy was at a coffee shop where there were 15 comedians, 2 audience members, and it was 90 degrees out. It was, like, end of July. And people were, like, sweating. It was so hot in this coffee shop. And nobody laughed at anything I said, except for at the very end when I just commented on how bad it had gone. And so later, like, several months later, my wife came with me to that open mic, watched essentially for what had happened 25 times in a row, that same scenario play out. And she's like, why do you come here? And I was like, there's so many more places that are like this than, like, a great comedy club open mic. So, yeah, there's a lot of that. Like, I don't know. Like, you're definitely going to face that if you do comedy, I think. Just like, or maybe I'm bad at comedy and nobody laughs at me and other, but.
No, but you listen to all these guys and they say that. They're like, you're going to bomb. You're going to, like, I did great one night, I bombed the next night, hit myself for a week. Like, it's.
Yeah. I always try to stress that I don't know anything also because there's some people that are like, I'm no expert on comedy. I don't know. I'm trying just like everybody else, right? So there's probably, I don't know. I just don't want to sound like I am like, oh, grandiose. That's not the right word.
But there's something about, And I've listened to your pods before, and there's like something about your delivery that makes you seem like an expert. You're well enough spoken and even toned enough that it actually comes across like you know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm a know-it-all. That's what I think it's called.
Like, oh, really?
Oh, no.
Is that how you feel?
I definitely, there are certain things that I'm very adamant about, like sports analytics.
Yeah, it seems like you know a thing or two about baseball.
I definitely know a thing or two about baseball. I'm to the point where I can't watch sports with my dad because I get frustrated because his mindset's so different, right? Like, I'm all numbers. That's all I care about with sports, and I definitely annoy people.
How does that affect your, I guess, trying to be like a comedian is like an art? Like, I guess there's an art to how you understand numbers, too, when it comes to sports and stuff, but like, how are those two worlds, how do they come together?
I don't know if they
do. How do you keep them apart?
I don't know if they do. I wish that like writing a joke was more academic and was like more, there was less gray area because, yeah, I don't know. I don't think they do at all. I don't think there's any overlap in those two parts of my life.
Would it be useful to find the bridge?
Yeah, maybe. I would love to find it. I'm constantly searching for it, I think, because my brain definitely works more in the numbers direction than it does in the, like, I think, artistic direction.
So how do you go from just, like, thinking you could tell a joke, or maybe not even thinking you could tell a joke, to actually getting on stage and telling jokes? Like, what's the where did you start, and how did you get to being up on stage somewhere?
So the first time I ever went on stage, I had this friend that he and I worked at a box factory. We both worked on the graveyard shift, and he was really funny, and we would, like, riff back and forth all day, right? And we worked on the weekends, and we knew there was an open mic at Giggles, which is now Laughs,
yeah,
in
sure.
Seattle, with a brief intermission as a strip club.
No offense to that place, but it's still a work in progress.
Yeah, they do get great headliners there, though. I will say, like, Dan Soder, I think, was there within the year.
Yeah.
Anyways, we went on for that open mic, and I just was, like, trying to feel the temperature of the water through my friend's toe, and I watched him do well. And then I watched him bomb really hard. I went on stage, pulled him off stage. I wasn't signed up for this open mic the second time. And then I tried to tell a joke on stage in his place, but I was probably too drunk to tell it. And then I got off stage. And that was when I was like 22. And then I met, I'd always wanted to do it and never had the courage to do it. And then I met Aaron Kirby. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's so he lives in Chicago now, but he's a comedian. We became really good friends, started a podcast together. And then one day I was like, hey man, I kind of want to try this. And he's like, oh, you should. And then I've probably annoyed him. I've certainly annoyed him asking questions since then. But
that's a good friend though, man. That's a good comedian too. Somebody who wants other people to come and do it too. If nothing else, to see you bomb. So that way he feels better about himself. But
I think that's exactly what he would say.
Rather than trying to just own it and be like, no, this is my thing, to be like, no, come on. Let's all do it. The better the scene, the more chance that more people will come, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. I bet it's not that complex the way that he thought of it. He's probably just like, I don't care. Let's do whatever. Like, do well or do bad, just stop talking about it.
If I say yes, will you go away?
Yeah, it was funny because, like, leading up to it, I signed up for this open mic like a month in advance, which is the only way that I could do things. Like, I have to sign up for things in advance. Otherwise, I will definitely, I will talk myself out of it. So I signed up for this open mic. And then I was sending him joke premises for like an entire month. And he's like, dude, I don't know if that's funny. Like, just do it on stage, have it go bad, have it go well. And
you'll find out real quick.
Yeah. And then it probably didn't go as well as I was able to delude myself into thinking it did.
So that's an important skill.
Yeah, I do think that's true. I think that's true. I'm sure you have experienced that at points in your career also.
Mine is all the opposite. I've never done one good thing ever. And no matter how much my wife tries to tell me, no, I heard you do this, it was fun. I'm like, no, I'm awful.
That is a real a showstopper is when I make my wife laugh. I know that's a good joke premise. Because I am not her favorite comedian by a long shot.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
If you can actually get her going, then you're like, I'm onto something.
Yeah. She'll go, oh, that's funny. And I'm like, oh, perfect. I could put that one in my pocket.
Are you constantly riffing around her and hoping to find something out of it?
No, I don't do that. I try not to do that because I think that's annoying when I find out people are doing that. Like, when they're just trying to, like, bounce jokes off you.
Yeah.
I will say, like, hey, is this funny? Tell her the joke, and then she'll say yes or no. Mostly she says no. So I, like, let her know it's a joke instead of, like, I'm going to take this to stage. You don't even know. We're just having this conversation right now. Because that's a kind of a disingenuous way to have a conversation, I think.
I agree. That, like, if you're... some people... I know a few people that have tried this before and they get a little nervous about it and so they can't help it. Like they just like that's what their mode is, trying to find what's going to work. And I applaud you for at least trying to quell your nerves by like working through it or something. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I get what you mean. If it's like, how annoying would it be if that's your whole conversational relationship with somebody? It
was well, especially it's like someone who I should have more than that. Like there's comedians who when I'm around, it's all just that, right? Like, and that's fine because we're both the same narcissistic, like, we don't need to get value out of this conversation, but when my wife is telling me about like her work day, I can't just like throw bits in the middle of it. Like she's not going to like that very much.
That's not being a good husband, no, you're right? I guess I don't know how somebody starts writing jokes. I guess I don't understand where you're like, okay, sit down and write some jokes now. I don't know if it's that straightforward or if it has to be like stop and write down an idea that you had.
I don't think that I know either. Cool. And I think that everyone is different. For me, like when I started out, I wrote, so I before I ever did comedy, before I ever did podcasts, I wrote like a sports blog, right? So my nature is, and it was like based on sports analytics with occasional attempts to be funny in it. But I'm like very much like write out, I want like the wording is extremely important to me when I'm writing something like that. I didn't even notice, comedians came up to me and they go, yeah, you look rehearsed when you're telling a joke. Like, the joke's fine, but you look rehearsed telling it. You look uncomfortable telling it. So I stopped writing word
for
word.
Why are you so uncomfortable?
Well, yeah, like, and that's the thing. That's what the funny thing about it is. You'll go like, oh, you look uncomfortable. Yeah, because I'm in front of 150 people I don't know. That's why I'm like,
you put me at the zoo in front of this many people and I'll be that uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. So for me, what I've tried to do is stop writing stuff out word for word so that I never have experienced it that way. So I don't rehearse. It's not rehearsed. Right? Yeah. It comes off less rehearsed. I don't know if that works. I don't know what the process, like everyone's process is different.
You know, I do a lot of writing for one time. Like in my job, I'll have to write like a bit for like a feature that I'm doing or something like right. that. And it'll be I'll do a couple rehearsals of it. But really, it's a skill in itself to be able to write for live speaking mm-hmm. without it sounding canned.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's crazy how, I mean, it's still a work in progress and it will be for forever, I'm
right.
sure. But to get there, so
I don't think I'm there yet, by the way.
Maybe there's something to the idea of just having the premise well enough worked out in your head that then you have to riff on it a little bit
right.
live or something.
Yeah,
too.
That might be.
I never really thought about it, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, like the first time I went up to, I have a mic because I have a podcast. So I, my wife was sitting, I had this whole premise written out word for word, or the whole joke written out word for word. My wife was sitting on the couch and probably 45 times I performed the joke to her in our living room. That's so embarrassing. But no wonder it sounded rehearsed because it had been rehearsed more times than I've ever rehearsed anything in my entire life.
But I mean, like you watch Chris Pratt in Guardians of the Galaxy and it's
right.
not like he's just winging it.
Right.
He's also a blockbuster actor, but there's some value to rehearsing, I guess, or having well-written bits that you have the wording the way you want also.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think everyone's style is different, too. Like, I know people who, Aaron Kirby, one of my best friends, doesn't write a single thing down on a piece of paper. Like, I looked at a joke of his one time, and it was about baseball, and he wrote, like, the only joke I've ever seen him actually write down on a piece of paper. And it was like the most, I can't even imagine what part of it was words and what part was a joke and what part was just like ancillary information that he had on there to like, I don't know what.
Dominoes.
Yeah.
253.
Yeah. It looked like hieroglyphics to me. And like for me, I have, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I still will like sit down and write it down when I have. I also, I learned this in school. My memory works better. I'll remember something if I write it down. If I don't write it down, I won't remember it. Once I write it down, I don't even need to look at the notes anymore, but writing it down like commits it to memory. So
I have the same thing where if I write it down once, then I have at least a grasp on it, but I don't have the same thing where I can remember it. It's like I now understand that I have a premise of something. So are you sitting down with just an idea and then working through it? I don't understand what the whole process is for being able to get up on stage and be able to repeat a joke from night to night.
So for me, I think what it is, it starts out with like a very small premise and then I write down everything I can think on that premise and then spend the rest of the time that joke exists tearing parts away from it.
Cool.
So like, and normally it ends up that I tear the whole thing away. Like the whole thing goes away.
Overthink it maybe a little bit, and
yeah, or I just hate it. Like, and the crowd does also hates it. Like, the I just realized that the part of it, it's funny because like my the jokes that I have that do the best, the part, like, without fail, the part that I thought was the most funny is just not in the joke anymore because crowds don't like it. And I'm not like I'm not that stubborn. Like, it's not a democracy, but enough crowds say they don't like that part. I'm going to stop saying it, I guess.
You'd like to once in a while come off stage feeling decent about the thing you did, I guess. That's okay. So it's an incredible system to... I'm the same way. I was in a thing called Future Problem Solving when I was in high school. Obviously very cool. And it was like they gave you like a premise and then you had to write down 10 things about... Like, here's this... like. It's raining acid. What are the problems that come from that? And you have to write down a bunch, and then you like find the most relevant problem, and then you write down 10 solutions to it, and you figure out the most relevant solution to that problem that you invented, and then you try to pitch that. And it seems sort of similar to that, I guess, your approach to it, at least.
Yeah, so my wife is an English teacher, and she makes students do things like this.
Yeah.
Like, they come in, and then she has, like, a question on the board.
And you're really her biggest project.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. That is right. She's I'm just the pretty face. She writes all the material in the background.
Say it better next time. Yeah,
edit this out. Edit this out of the podcast. So I don't know. But then I know people that don't do that at all. Like, I don't know. I wish my brain worked that way where I could just like think of something at 2 p.m., go home, get drunk, take a nap, wake up at 8 p.m., go tell it on stage and have it like somewhat formed, or even do that and then have it be bad and then fix it the next day. Like, I'm like meticulous about I've recorded all but like 5 sets I've ever done in my whole life. I still have my first set ever recorded. It's so bad though. Like, I went back and listened to it like 6 months in, or maybe even a year in, and I was like, ooh, why did you keep doing this? Like, you should have, that was bad.
If you feel like sending a joke to us so we can put it in the pod, please go right ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. That's like, for me, that's the way that it's always worked for like everything though, right? For writing, for podcast, like I'm just a little bit regimented where I don't know if most people, I don't know if they're like that.
So you might be a little envious of a way that somebody else can do it. Have you ever caught wind of maybe someone else who's like, oh, I wish I could write better?
Oh yeah. I think everyone that just envies the thing that they don't do as well, right? I think that's what it is.
Human nature.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm very stoic, or not stoic, I'm like a statue on stage. I don't move around on stage at all. It's like a thing that bothers me that I don't do, right? Like, I've just recently started to like force myself to move because I don't have jokes that require me moving around or acting stuff out. And I just envy people that can do that naturally, right? Like, I'll see people go up first open mic and they feel comfortable, like they're like Chris Rock walking, like stomping across the stage, and I'm like, yeah, maybe you can't tell a joke, but you do this thing that I've been trying to do for a long time and can't do it.
Yeah, you can sell your not jokes, but you can't. Wow, that's fantastic. Okay, so then I guess I'm fascinated by how people use their comedy in different directions. Like, it's not just about getting on stage, the scariest part of doing comedy, I think, to be actually in front of humans that are like, I don't like you. And you've gone different avenues. First, with the Offspeed podcast is the first I'm familiar with you.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if you've done stuff before that or not.
I had a sports blog for a while, and I technically had a podcast on it, but Offspeed was definitely like, I don't know, what was that, 3 years ago it started? And that was like probably the coolest thing like that I've done. Not the most like financially successful, but the most fun for sure.
Sure. And so how did you feel like podcasting helped your comedy?
It introduced me to Aaron, is honestly like
how'd you guys hook up?
I had the sports blog and like a bad podcast on that sports blog.
Yeah.
And it's a very romantic story.
Yeah.
Aaron and I started arguing on a thread of a comedian. I didn't know he was a comedian at the time. And then I saw he was a comedian. I saw he liked the Mariners. And at the time, his Facebook said that he lived in Tacoma. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. And then it turns out he lived in like Kirkland at that time. But he came to my house this really does sound like I'm talking about the beginning of a romantic relationship.
Sure.
He came to my house the first time.
Oh.
And we did a podcast and we had so much chemistry that the next week, he came back and did another podcast. And then the next week, he came back and did another podcast. And I remember after like the third podcast, I said to my wife, I was like, I kind of want to ask Aaron to do a podcast with me. And she's like, it was a real life, like she was trying to convince me to ask a girl out. And it was funny because he was leaving. It was like waited. Like, this is like exactly how I am with women too, which is I'm so happy I'm married. I waited till he was like leaving.
Hey, real quick.
From the third post. I was like, hey, by the way, I have an idea. And do you think sometime maybe you might want to consider possibly doing a podcast with me? And he was like, dude, I've been talking to my girlfriend about that for weeks.
Oh, you guys like, are adorable.
I know. I'm blushing right now telling this story. And then that's how it started. And then, like, I don't know. We had a lot of great chemistry. I think we were very different from each other too. Like, he's a goofball and I'm into analytics. And I think that went well. It was like the thing that made us do well on there. And probably the thing that ultimately ended the podcast is how different we were.
I mean, him moving to Chicago could not have been helpful.
It definitely wasn't helpful, but we've talked about it a lot of times off, like, obviously not on a podcast, but we've talked about it a lot of times. And we were both done doing the podcast way before he moved to Chicago. Like, it had just run its course, I think, and it was a blast. For a while, it was the funnest thing I did all week.
Sure.
And then probably comedy took over that. And then it started to be inconvenient because he was working like 7 days a week. He did a Twitch show, and I was doing comedy, and we had a third guy, and so, like, coordinating our schedules was a nightmare, and it became, like, and I wanted to prepare, and he didn't have time to prepare, because his schedule was packed, and he wanted to maintain a relationship with his girlfriend.
All good problems to have, except for the pod.
Sure, yeah, so, but anyways, that's where it ended up, and I think, like, he just stopped liking doing it. And when one person stops liking doing it, this is like a really like a VH1 Behind the Music thing we got going on here. Anyway, I stopped liking doing it, and then we stopped doing it. And that's probably the best way to handle something like that.
Did it feel okay when you stopped?
Oh, yeah. We're still great friends. I talk to him all the time. There was probably, I think it lifted a weight off of everyone's shoulders because there was like a little bit of growing animosity. But we're still, like, I still talk to him. He still sends me awful pictures on my text message while I'm at work all the time. We're still cool. I still bother him about comedy stuff way more than he wants me to.
What's your day job?
I do software analytics stuff.
Obviously.
It's funny because they call me a systems analyst, but I'm definitely not qualified for that. So I'm not going to say the company.
No, that's fine. Yeah, yeah.
But they are. It's not like exciting.
Yeah, it was not anything what I was hoping to get out of that. That question was a throwaway.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So how many episodes did you guys do of Off Speed?
We did like 85 full episodes, and then we did a couple like that we called 0.5s, yeah, where it would be just a one-on-one interview or something that was different from what we would normally do. We had like a real, it was kind of fun because we had like a real format. Like, we had, this is the order things go in. Like, it was probably the closest thing I've ever come to making good radio, because we had like, these are the segments we want to do, this is the format. And then when we broke that, we would call it a 0.5, because if we were talking to, if it was just me talking to someone,
yeah,
or whatever. So like probably over 100 total.
Cool.
Yeah.
You're a good interviewer too.
Thank you.
Listening to some of the things you've done, it's which is rad. When you get, and you were good enough, I guess, to get some opportunities. Who are some of your favorites that you were able to sit down with and talk to with Off Speed? You were tied into the Mariners, all right.
We did. Kevin Martinez has been, he's the VP of marketing for the Mariners. He has been one of the most like giving people with his time. He's the best. Kevin Martinez, I have nothing but good things to say about. And he's like a great interview. He's funny. He's interesting. He won't swear on the podcast. That's he's probably I've interviewed him twice. I have a new podcast. I interviewed him on that. The obvious one. We got John Ryan to come into my dining room in Tacoma and drink beer and swear. And his wife's a comedian. We talked about her a bunch. Like, that was a blast. That was very cool.
That was my first introduction to in general, was John Ryan coming on Off Speed. And fantastic that he's just that down that he was like, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. And he showed up and was just like a casual kind of quiet guy. I mean, he said some fun stuff or whatever, but it was like
I've tried to get him on podcasts since then. No response. I have his phone number. I think he's changed it, or he's got me under do not respond.
Exactly.
That was amazing, and that all happened. Like, we never thought that was a potential thing we could do, right? Like, I know a decent amount of sports writers, and I could get there's a guy I'm friends with named Eno Saris that writes for FanGraphs, and he's a guy that, like, I respect a ton. I can get him on a podcast, and for, like, me and a handful of people that I'm friends with, that's a real big deal. But John Ryan was like, holy moly, like, that guy,
you get some real downloads on that.
Yeah, he's like, I mean, he's famous.
Yeah,
he's famous around here especially, and he's funny. And, like, I also think that I've tried to get interviews with players on this new podcast. Dude, it's hard.
That was my next question for you, is like the challenges of getting through the, I think as you called it, the red tape, I guess.
Yeah.
To be able to get through to the players. You know, I'm tweeting back and forth with Brad Evans, and I'm like, come in and be on my radio show. And
yeah,
he was like, yeah, sure. We'll never do it. I have to ask the guy at the Sounders 9,000 times until they're ready to do something. And I don't know what's going on there. Like,
yeah.
But the fact that I can, like, go back and forth directly with a person on the internet, but they won't do anything because they have protocol to follow, and that's difficult protocol to get through. And then some guy tweets at freaking Clint Dempsey, come be on my fishing show.
Yeah.
And, like, he's like, hey, yo, make this happen. And they're like, okay, yeah, sure, Clint. Like, like, it's a crazy process, and I don't think people know about that.
It's all, like, it all feels so inconsistent. Like, I am friendly with this guy named John Baker that was a baseball player for a long time. Now he's the mental skills coordinator for the Cubs. Someone told him to be on our podcast, and I just started, like, texting with him a little bit away from that. And when we could never make it work to get him on our podcast until the Mariners cut him, and then he was, like, basically retired.
Yeah.
And I got him on twice, no problem, talked about, like, controversial issues. he was, like, so open about the things about the Mariners he was frustrated about.
Wow.
And then he's on the Cubs now, and I was like, hey, man, I'd like to talk to you about what a mental skills coordinator does, because I don't think anyone knows.
Yeah.
And it was the first podcast of the new one.
Okay, so let's talk about that real quick. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's called Cask Audio.
Cask Audio, yeah.
It's like Cascadia.
Only
audio. It's very clever. I like the look of it, and the logo's simple enough, easy enough to understand.
I'm trying to get that thing on a T-shirt or something. I think it would make a decent T-shirt.
I got a guy for you.
All right.
Shout outs to Cool Keith. We'll talk about that here in a second. He's the best. He's a 253 guy as well.
Oh, great. That's perfect.
The new podcast is, you're, I think, 6 episodes in now. And actually, I went to the lead off because I saw John Baker, and I was like,
good.
Well, let's listen to this. And you guys have familiarity. It's not just you interviewing some random dude, and he's funny.
Yeah, he's great.
And now I want to go back and find out what he sounds like when he's not holding back.
That was the thing, is this time around, like, he goes, I'll be fine to do it. It just didn't work out while they were in spring training to do it. Like, his schedule never matched my schedule. And then by the time we were like, okay, we're going to do it on Thursday, he's like, I just got an email from the VP of whatever.
Yeah.
I got to get approval. Like, can you at least send him something that says, like, this is what we're going to talk about, so that he feels okay about it?
Sure.
Which was interesting, because he'd been so, like, the whole time he wanted to do it. The whole time he wanted to do it, and he would have done it, but he has, like, this, there's bureaucracy.
Yeah.
When you work for,
because they have to control their image.
Totally.
Right. And then on top of that, MLB says you have to control your image a certain way. Like, for instance, the MLS is notorious because MLS controls their media really heavily because it's a brand new league and it's growing super fast, and they don't want it to get out of control. And I respect that. I totally understand how that would become a thing. It's just frustrating when you're, like, a dude talking to a dude, and you're like, but just do the same dude talk only over here, so everyone wins.
Yeah. And I'm not like, I mean, it's not like he and I are having long phone calls where, you know, but he's like, was totally gung-ho to do it. Had no problems with it.
You could tell when you talk to him, like, he's like, in the first episode of Cascadia, you can, like, hear that he's, like, excited to talk to you.
I wish that I stopped recording and we had this, like, this is my favorite thing about doing those, is a lot of times what'll happen is I'll record an interview with someone for, like, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we end up talking for another hour and a half, and it's like, I understand why you wouldn't let me record that.
Yeah.
But this is great.
Like, this is way better.
Yeah. I wish that the world could hear your opinions on this. Because, he was phenomenal. He's, like, such a smart guy. Like, I don't know, baseball players maybe, I don't know if they get enough credit for how smart they are. That dude is extremely smart. And
mental skills coach
means
that he helps people deal with the struggles of the pressure of being a top level whatever.
Yeah, he called it being a camp counselor, and I think then he described something that is nothing like what a camp counselor does.
It's like being a camp counselor, you know, rowing and swimming. And no, not that at all. It's like dealing with the pressures of being crushed by a giant machine where 30,000 people yell at you every day.
Yeah,
it's
having
like
your dreams end in a second when you, you know, whatever, are cut by a team or... Yeah, that's... He's great. And I agree. Like, the whole getting guests thing is such a tough... I'm glad to hear you struggle with it, too, because you could... I had a guy, a Major League Baseball, I guess, executive. He's, like, on the marketing team of or marketing department of a team. And he was like, I can't get you players. We have a club policy, no players on podcasts that aren't run by like massive organizations.
Yeah.
Which is whatever. That's like, I understand that that's like what a podcast is, right?
Sure.
Especially right now. And he even said like, someday maybe that'll be different. We're not really caught up to like modern media. But then he's like, I could let you talk to a couple of our broadcasters. And I was like, that'd be great. Like, they're like former big leaguers. They have a full Spanish language broadcasting team.
Awesome.
That'd be like, I would love to hear from those guys, like talk to those guys. And then he was like, hey, can I get a link to your podcast? And this is like a very, this is very much like doing an open mic in a crowd not liking it, because I sent him a link to the podcast and he goes, how about you do a couple more and then talk to me again? And I was like, okay, like this probably isn't going to happen, because I sent him the Kevin Martinez one, which is about as tame as I can be.
Yeah.
And that wasn't enough for him to sign off on it. So
it's tough though, man, because I get to, like you're saying, I have to worry about what I say because I have advertisers, but I also get to use the tentpole of a major market radio station to be like, hey, how about you do this thing? But it's still not easy.
Yeah.
It's still, and like, you know, newsflash, people that run sports organizations typically aren't just like homegrown people that like worked their way up. They like came from somewhere else and they've lived here for 7 weeks and they don't know what this organization I'm representing is. And so I don't care who you think you are. You're just some guy annoying me right now.
Yeah, I'm almost like, sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes I'm also blown away that people actually agree to do it at all, right? Because it's definitely inconvenient. Like, the idea that John Ryan at some point got a direct message from me on Twitter and I said, hey, do you want to drive 40 miles and sit in my dining room in a city that you're probably not familiar with? And talk to me for an hour and a half and potentially say something that'll ruin your career. And he was like, okay. Like, that's, I cannot put myself in his shoes saying yes to that. Like, to say that if I ever was famous at all, I would do it, but I'd immediately stop talking to everyone.
I'm not ever leaving my house again. Thank you. But it's fun to be able to get in to do that. He must have had a good time.
I think he had a good time. Not good enough to do it again.
You might have to come to him next time.
Yeah, that's true. He has his own podcast now, and maybe that's the deal.
Tell us where we can find Cask Audio.
It's so I have a website, caskaudio.com. It's spelled like Cascadia, but the last part of it's audio.
Yeah.
Caskaudio.com, but then I got this kick-ass URL that's CASC.audio, which I really like. The second I thought of the name Cask Audio, I knew that I was quitting Offspeed Podcast and burning the whole thing down. I was very happy to come up with that. And I, anyways, it's that. And then there's some other podcasts on that website, like our old former co-host, his name's, well, he doesn't use his name. BRC Yeah is his Twitter handle, and that's what he uses. He has like a kind of MMA podcast on there. We got a couple more.
Love a kind of podcast. Yeah, that's good.
Drink and Debate actually is a podcast.
Oh, good.
And there's two episodes of it up on the website right now, and I'll be releasing, or no, there's only one up right now, and I'll be releasing the second one right before the live show at Tacoma Comedy Club. And we have a couple other things going on.
So yeah, like a little network that you're
kind
that you're
of
doing
it's
yeah.
more like I don't want to put any work into it being a network. It's like I know a lot of people who are doing their podcasts in a way that makes me not want to listen to them, like the audio quality sucks or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like I want to help those people. I don't really want to like go recruit anyone, or there's not a lot of money to be made in podcasts.
Yeah.
So
I'm lucky because I can be like, hey, for an hour, I'm actually doing something work. Yes, this is working, isn't it? Of course, I'm going to go home at noon today so that way I can come back and do work later. They're like, oh, very good. Yes.
Also, I bought you some time off. Is that what's going on?
Yes, effectively.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow,
I mean, I also,
good.
I it's In recording time versus internet time, which is timeless, it's 6:29 right now, and I go to bed at 7. So
do you go to bed at 7?
That's when I get into bed. Then we watch some Frasier, and then
you watch. Oh, dude, we are falling in love.
I can't wait.
It's funny. My wife is a big Frasier fan, and I never liked that show. And then we sat down and watched it. Pretty good show.
The writing is fantastic. If you're gonna be offended by like rich hoity-toity white guys being annoying, then fine. You're never gonna like Frasier. But the writing is well done.
It's amazing though, because I never had like watched that show with enough attention to like. There's some stuff on that show that like if that came out today, there's some like. Offensive stuff. Like, I guess that's probably true of all the shows
sure,
around that
yeah,
time,
it's a
right?
Different time.
Like just the language, like the words that you're supposed to say in place of other words have changed. But it's also funny because there's a lot of like humor that's make like the joke is someone's gay, and Niles and the dad are both gay in real life.
Yeah. So they use the thing where like, well, they were cool with it. So, Casey, where can we find you specifically online so we can tweet nice pictures of weird pictures to you?
I'm at the Casey McClain and at or in the Casey McClain. Yeah, send me some naked genitalia pics, please.
If you're listening, Aaron, we mean you.
He's beat you to the punch dozens and dozens of times. The Casey McClain on Twitter and thecaseymcclain.com.
Dude, thanks for coming all the way up to Seattle to do
Thank
this.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to So You're in Seattle with Gregor. Follow him on Twitter at HeyGregor. Find more episodes online at SoYou'reInSeattle.com. So You're in Seattle is a Burrito Butt production.
Yeah, you're a good dog, Chowder.